Test. Okay, we have soundbars moving. All right, Nomadic Hacker joining us here in the comments. Apparently, the first couple minutes, apparently there was no audio for some reason. So let me start again. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight, we are on episode 228. Okay, good. Nomadic Hacker, you can hear me there. Sorry about that, bud. I just got back from my training regiment there. Literally just sat down in front of the computer and fired it up to try and get to this this podcast here tonight. As you might have noticed in past episodes, I wasn't here at home. So kind of coming in hot, turned it on, expected it to work. Not sure how my mic settings got changed there. But anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about this this recent news article going around global news of the 69-year-old Coquitlam. Man, I cannot say that word. I practiced literally for 2 minutes to try and say that. Coquitlam? I believe it's something like that. Oh, Ben's coming into us here now. Just give me 1 second. And we will get Ben joined into the podcast. And hopefully this is going to work pretty seamlessly. Once again, we're trying stuff that we have never tried here in Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. If you're wondering why I'm looking over this way, this happens to be where Ben's camera is. All right, you there with us, Ben? Okay, yep, we got a little bit of sound there. We have Nomadic Hacker joined us here in the comments right from the get-go. Apparently, I came in a little hot, too. First 3 minutes, the wrong mic was selected, so, you know, good times. We're just getting to the intro here. I just said we're going to be talking about the 69-year-old lady that had gotten lost in the Conklin. Am I saying that right? Do you know, Ben?
Is it Coquitlam, I think it was.
Coquitlam? All right. So, it's difficult for me to say. So, anyway, in that area, she got lost in the woods for 5 days. She had dementia, but she was found. Search and rescue teams were out there. They did find her 5 days later. She appeared in some searchers' backyard is what I'm led to believe by the reading the story there, and yeah. She was perfectly well and good and dandy.
Yeah, so I mean, the best they could tell, all she had was a stick and a cup. We're doing an unboxing here today.
But yeah, she was found. She had a stick and a cup, and they figured that she had you know, scavenged and eaten some berries while she was in the area, and literally was just drinking out of the stream, and she was found in good spirits. She didn't seem hungry or fatigued in any way. She met her son with smiles like nothing had happened. I mean, it's kind of an amazing story just from that point of view alone.
Yeah. No, I thought it was, and I kind of thought, like, you know, all these people out there talk about all the stuff you need and all that, and here's somebody with dementia, you know, that was able to do it. You know, they said there was a small amount of berries in the area and some drinkable water, and she did 5 days in some pretty, you know, severe weather, and in the fact that it gets quite hot, and so yeah.
So my question to this story would be, prior to this, did she have any outdoors experience? They did say that she went on regular walks, you know what I mean, and in this particular instance she just kind of kept on trucking. And there was a spell there. I mean, I went back and kind of followed the story from inception up until this point. There was a spell there where, you know, they were starting to wonder, do the time frames, how the story was going to end. You know what I mean? In the interview with the son, he had already said he was preparing himself for a non-happy ending. And luckily that wasn't the case. You know what I mean? But 5 days, that's a long time to go out into the woods, even when you have gear. And this lady just wandered out in her walking clothes.
Well, from my experience with search and rescue, the thing you have to keep in mind is that as every day goes on, the likelihood of a good result does go down. Like, it's an unfortunate fact, but it does, right? And you have to keep yourself somewhat realistic in these situations because, you know, if you get your hopes up too high, which happens, it can end quite poorly. And so this was great. This was a happy ending. Like, this is what everyone hopes comes out of it. The person is healthy and fit, and or as fit as they've ever been, and can continue on. And the reality is people can last quite a while. But I think that just from the bit I've managed to read and hear, and that I'm going to infer some stuff. I'm going to read between lines. Where she was with dementia, she probably didn't fully ever realize she was lost.
Yeah, and that's kind of what they alluded to with the story there. With the dementia, she only remembered snippets, you know, little bits of information from the five days that she was actually out into the woods there, and it wasn't much of a story to put together. Such, unfortunately, is the side effects of dementia, or the main effect of dementia. Actually, it's not a side effect. It literally just, it can distort your reality, you know what I mean? You lose massive time gaps. You can think that you're in a different time with different people. That alone is challenging enough in a modern world, but to take that off into the woods and just be perfectly okay. I mean, it's kind of an amazing story.
No, it definitely is. And it's, but it struck to me is that state of mind, as in if you're not panicking, you're not doing anything really foolish, and a little bit of ingenuity, you don't need a ton of resources to survive. I'm not suggesting everyone just throw the rest of the gear out, because I'm still buying gear every day. You know, when you look at your gear and you decide, oh, I absolutely must have this or absolutely must have that, like, start to understand what your musts are and what your true needs are. And, like, keeping a really good attitude that I'm going to be fine or I'm not really in that big of a danger, while being, you know, reasonably cautious. So don't just put, you know, headlong in one direction, regardless of what direction that is, because that could lead to a lot more problems. Somebody with dementia doesn't tend to wander far. They tend to wander in circles. Most people, you know this, most people do tend to stick in a certain area.
Yep.
It's just in human nature. So, but when you panic, sometimes you break that cycle and you think, oh, this is great. Now I'm not doing what I shouldn't be doing, but you could actually just do more of what you absolutely should. So maybe you'll go straight, but straight in the wrong direction. And some people have been known to panic and actually go not only in the wrong direction, but cross landmarks that they should never have crossed.
Right? People have crossed roads, lost in the woods, and just kept on trucking through.
Yeah, and this is a statistic we've talked about before, and I don't think it ever loses its
importance, hit, you know, like, of being calm.
Well, I mean, it's a big deal. Like, you would think somebody who's lost, once they found a road, they'd be like, oh, I'm found. Like, I'm not moving from this road. I'm going to sit down here and someone's going to drive by and I'm going to be fine. But that isn't always the case.
No. And in this instance, like you said, the lady seemed to be in entirely good spirits. From what she remembered from the ordeal, she seemed to be okay. You know what I mean? She thought she was just out walking. She picked some berries, had a snack, and she just kind of kept on keeping on. I do kind of want to probe you. I have a rabbit hole here, if you're willing to indulge me a little bit, Ben. This was another thing that kind of came up, and I had a question to you about. And unfortunately, we didn't have any time to prep before this, so I'm kind of sticking you on the spot here. But if you'll indulge me, let's dive down a slight rabbit hole, shall we?
This is totally new for us. I don't know what to do. Okay.
All right. So one of the quotes towards the end of the interview with the son of the lady that had gone missing there, he said, as Canada ages, this will become a problem, and it's up to us as a society to come up with better tracking solutions to help people living with dementia. So what he meant being a problem was dementia-stricken people potentially just wandering away and into the woods. And from what I'm understanding, there's not a lot of tracking methods there that he's aware of, or at least that this story covers. However, here in Nova Scotia, and being prior resident of Nova Scotia with Ground Search and Rescue, we have something here called Project Lifesaver. Is this not something that kind of continues through the rest of Canada? Is this exclusive to Nova Scotia? Are you aware of this at all?
I am aware of Project Lifesaver, and I assume it's for more provinces, but on the top of my head, I don't really know the answer.
Okay, so for our listeners out there, well, Ben scratches his head for a moment because I did stick him on the spot, as mentioned, and I'm sure he needs a second to compile some info here. What Project Lifesaver is, I became aware of it through my wife's work with neurodiversity and our daughter being autistic and being in autism picked candy and stuff like that. They have this Project Lifesaver, and there is a couple of these children that have
It's international.
Is it international? Okay. I was going to say, I know there are some kind of tracking methods here, but I didn't know enough that if they were viable elsewhere. But anyway, coming back to Project Lifesaver, it's basically a wristband that looks like a watch. It gets put on. It's kind of like a radio tracker. It doesn't really work with GPS so much because the worry there is if you're transmitting data like that, who else can find it? You know what I mean? You don't want to potentially something like a GPS tracker, a spot tracker, something like that. One, it has to be activated. But if it's all time broadcasting the signal, I think the worry is if somebody could figure out how to pick up that signal, they could potentially find out where these kids live and, you know, they may prey upon them or something like that, which is completely horrific. But I think that is the problem, you know, the safety factor of this. So this works on a specific radio frequency, much like when they're tracking aquatic life and things like that. You know what I mean? They put the tracker on. They have these great big specialized antennas. They can point in directions. And literally, you've seen it on TV where it just kind of beeps quicker and louder as they get closer. That's the kind of idea. Is it going to pinpoint them right to a specific location like a GPS would? No, but it greatly reduces the search time and stuff, because it gives them a base point. These things work for long distances. And as Ben had said, most people, they're found very close to where they were last seen. This lady's instance, she was seen going by, it was a neighbor's motion camera, and she was found less than a kilometer away from the last place she was seen, you know what I mean? And yet these search and rescue teams had gone out and they had covered several kilometers over the time that she was missing, like square, large kilometer areas. And it just so happened that they didn't cross paths. You know what I meant? She was found in an area that was previously searched, meaning that she had moved into the area after it had been searched. And it wasn't just people on the ground. There was aircraft involved. Like, this was a pretty fairly big operation. It wasn't just fluke of the luck. It was just fluke of luck that she kind of managed to squeeze through the net. You know what I mean? It does happen. And this is kind of one of those things that I think would make that net tighter and allow search and rescue to better find these people. Now, my question to you, Ben, and this is where I'm going to pick your brain a little bit, and I don't know if you know the answers. Something like the boreal forest. I know I'm throwing a big area out there. Would this help in any way, shape, or form for a search in an area that size? Or are we looking more towards it just wouldn't be reliable enough and we'd need to work on to some GPS things? Because I know the other one that's used here, it's very similar to those like Apple AirTag kind of doodads, but they work on a GPS principle. And if you have all the correct credentials, pretty much anyone can track those things.
So I did work on Project Lifesaver, and it took me a second to sort of get fully booted up here. Sorry, a couple things in the back of my head. So Project Lifesaver uses the radio waves, and yes, you can search a large area. So with the handheld device, you can get it directional, but there's a unidirectional antenna so that if you're within like 2 kilometers of the person, it'll actually pick it up. And then what you do is you keep tuning its frequency, like not frequency, its amplitude down and down until you're closer and closer so that you can pinpoint it. And you can get triangulation using this thing. We can also use helicopters. So helicopters can do it. So you can fly over a large area and see if you pick up the pings.
So the antennas on these could be mounted on helicopters. So that right there tells me you can get a vast area shortened down pretty quick, especially if it's, you know, if you're saying it's about a 2 kilometer search area and you're flying, I mean, you would have to fly slow. I assume you can't go full bore, full throttle. You could pass that area really quick.
And 2 kilometers is ideal. I think it's generally significantly less than that, but.
Well, let's even say a kilometer square, you can plot a flight path to cover a lot of ground pretty quick on that.
So, and that's the thing. The beauty with Project Lifesaver is it is intended to work pretty quick. So you get a call, any department. So I know Ontario OPP actually does it. In Nova Scotia, it's ground search and rescue. Down in the States, it's often with police forces. I don't know if, say, BC has equivalent, but I assume they do. But anyways, the party that's responsible for it
generally has about 30 minutes from the time of call to the time of point last seen. That's to prevent this person from getting too far out of range. And what we will immediately do is we will take the receiver, and there are a couple of antennas we can use, but the omnidirectional one can go on top of a car or could be on something like a helicopter, and they can narrow it down to a general area. And what we would do then is once we get a ping, they might fly around and they can sort of get a rough idea of where they would be, and they put us in with our handheld wands, which look just like you used to see for wildlife tracing. Yep. So, you know, it's kind of like the old-fashioned antenna behind your roof. There's three or four things that come out. And as you go to one side or the other, what it's doing is seeing if it's getting more signal on one side or the other. And if you get it pointed directly at and it's equal, you get a better ping. So you can triangulate. If you get two people, you can draw two lines and say, okay, they should be about here. But it will bounce off walls and it will do weird things. So as you get closer sometimes, because I got tested on this thing. We would have to locate three or five modules or the transmitters inside of 30 minutes with a certain range. Like we had parameters we had to meet. They say the GPS, the problem is like take my GPS tracker that I have, fully charged up, it'll send, like it can do tracking. They say in ideal conditions, you can get about 30 days on it. The reality is probably not if you're inside buildings and you're running it at night. But if you're just running it when you're moving, you can get quite a length of time. These people that wear them, they're most of them, you don't even want them to be aware of it. So you put it on and have them wear it. So it gets to the point where they think of it as a piece of jewelry. And they kind of forget.
And that's my experience with it, is most of the kids that I see wearing these things, it looks like a bracelet, you know what I mean? Or whatever kind of piece of jewelry, and they just interact with it as a piece of jewelry. In some of the instances, I don't even think these things are removable. They kind of reminded me of like the one-piece bands where you actually require a special tool to remove them, much like ankle bracelets. But don't think ankle bracelets. We're not trying to compare ankle bracelet to these things. These things are good. Ankle bracelets are bad. But they kind of remind me of that kind of thing that you put on and you need special equipment to remove it, simply because these individuals, dementia, autism, whatever the case happens to be, you don't want them to remove it and just leave it, because then it becomes kind of useless. And what I'm understanding here is these things have no batteries in them. So
No, they have a battery and they have to be replaced every month.
Oh, okay.
Every 2 months.
I did not realize that.
So we used to have to do that. Like I never did a battery replacement. There is a tool for changing the battery. You drive around and you get the battery, and it's all part of the package when you pay for it. You pay a monthly subscription to be on this. You have to meet certain criteria. So basically anyone who's on this program has to be under 24-hour surveillance. So if it's somebody living at home alone, so in the beginning stages of dementia, some people do. And it's as they people realize that the dementia is getting worse and worse and they get nervous, that's when they try to lock them down. Well, if you don't have somebody living with them 24/7, you won't qualify, because from the time they go missing to the time they get discovered missing could be 12 hours, at which point they could be 5-6 kilometers away. And I mean, we discussed this and said you could use a helicopter or something, but like I said, if they're inside of a community or inside of a building, a lot of the stuff can block that signal. It's not a super strong radio. So your chances of finding them go down significantly. You want to try and locate them right away. The theory is within 30 minutes, they'll still probably be within range, pinging range, or within a quick few minute drive in any direction, we can pick them up.
Okay, that's fair. And this is all stuff I didn't know about the system. Like, I had just seen it a little. Melissa probably knows more about it than I would at this point. I just knew of its existence. Actually, I knew that a couple kids wore something that was for tracking, and that's about where the extent of my knowledge was. It was Mel telling me, roughly briefing me on this before this, that gave me any kind of the indication I had on this. So from your opinion then, Ben, what would be a better system to go towards? Think, because this could be the kind of market where it's going to be sole purposed for, you know, Alzheimer's and flight risks and, you know, a whooping risk and things like that. But maybe it could be double marketed for the outdoorsman as well. and they could take a bigger market. Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. It's not a bad idea to come up with a better system. And I mean, I'm not smart enough to do it.
The better system is the Spot, the Defy, or the InReach style systems. So I have the InReach system. There's a Spot system, and the new iPhones come with a system now with, I think it uses the same satellites, the Starlink or whatever, that Defy and Spot use. And then Zelos and InReach use the Iridium platform. Both of those are really good, but they require a charged, decent device.
And there's going to be the key problem here, much like, you know, we talked about there, is it'd be nice to come up with a system that maybe didn't have so many bells and features. It was literally just a ping, you know what I mean? It didn't really need the cell connection. It didn't need any of that. Didn't have to send messages.
So here's the problem with Project Lifesaver. There's a few issues with it for like a hiker. You're traveling a fair amount of distance, and it could be 2 or 3 days before someone notices you're missing as a hiker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you said it should be within 30 minutes of them reporting going missing, ideally.
So Project Lifesaver isn't going to want to take you on. And even if they do, you still need to have a ballpark idea of where the person is too. Although the braces aren't easily taken off, they can be cut. You can get more cut-resistant ones. We had some leather ones, nylon strap. We had a couple of options, and we would try them with different people. With a hiker or somebody who's more self-aware, I think a device where they can make that call is important. So Motorola is pushing their Defy line, I think it's called. And that's a device that you can literally hit a help, and it'll send a message to the satellite, send your coordinates, and then your search and rescues can find you. The Project Lifesaver thing doesn't give coordinates, and your searcher needs to be within a reasonable distance to you to narrow it down. And even if it's the far end of the range, then it's going to, it's not a fast process. Like, you're walking and searching and walking and searching. So you take a few steps, you're constantly swinging. So it's not like it's a fast paced walk, right?
So I guess for me, what would be neat is, you know, those self-winding watches, they wind by the movement of your arm. If you could kind of try and tie that into a self-charging watch, something that has a soul. And I know Garmin has something similar to this, but once again, very high price point, a lot of bells and whistles that probably aren't required for this specific purpose. That would be kind of neat. You know, get something that's mixed with just a little solar panel on the top of it, much like, you know, the old fashioned calculators. I don't know what kind of power is required to keep a transmitter going, I guess. This would be more down your alley than mine.
So Garmin does make some solar power. I looked at one called the Instinct. And the Instinct, they say, if you dumb it down to just a regular watch, can pretty well run indefinitely. If you're using more of its features, your battery life goes down quite a bit. And I don't know, like, how much sunlight it needs to maintain. So with these devices, where, like you said, you can go to different levels, but I don't believe those are directly InReach capable. So you would still probably need another InReach device. But some of their handheld GPS units have InReach capability. Some of their, I think, and a lot of them, those watches, the Instinct 2 anyways, can link to that device. So even if you had it in your backpack, with an additional power slow, it could last forever. You could activate it within 30 meters with a different device that's capable of linking up to it.
And that would definitely be a lot better for the hiking aspect of it, because I guess still for the dementia side of this or any of the other flight risk sides, somebody still has to report that you're missing. You know what I mean? So people are generally not going to self-report in this instance, because as we talked about with the story starting off, she was most likely not even aware that she was lost, so to speak. You know what I mean? To her, she was just out for a walk. The days probably blended together a little bit, and it was just an extended walk with enthusiasm.
Yeah. I think the big thing now is almost every cell phone is capable of some degree of this.
Is capable of what?
Well, some degree of tracking, like not 100%. If you go outside of cell phone range, it has some limitations and stuff. But the reality is, most of our cell phones are constantly tracking us anyways. And so if you have a loved one that you want to keep track on, you can ask to share your location with that person. I do it with my wife. I do it with some of my kids. So if I need to know where my kids are in an emergency, I can go in and check. Am I constantly checking for them? No, that's not really the point of what we did. But the reality is I can, and that's a big deal.
But I guess in the dementia side of this, they would have to be coherent enough that they would want to keep the phone on them at all times. You know what I mean?
Well, I feel that maybe the oldest generation that are having it, Alzheimer's now, might not. But the newer generation are so used to having a cell phone on them. I think even with dementia, they would still do it.
And you got a good point there, too. Our cell phones are pretty trained into us. Most people are never more than a room away from their cell phone, if not an arm's length away from their cell phone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think as time goes on, even if you were losing your mind, and here's the thing, some people, when they first start realizing it, would start even putting notes to themselves within their phone to help combat that for a while. So I think for a lot of people, your cell phone can help with that. Yes, but I did ask the question, why would we not be using a device that had GPS that we could ping and it would send us to coordinates? And basically what I was told is that for it to have a strong enough receiver and transmitter, it would have to be significantly bigger, and then somebody would have to probably most likely remember to charge it. And these individuals tend to not. So the battery, which is similar to like the battery in a bathroom scale, it's a little or a large watch in these things. It does last 30 to 60 days. We check it every 30 days and generally replace it. Also, the caretaker has a little device that they can put near it, and it'll indicate if it's still transmitting. So they can do an impromptu check, and they're supposed to basically daily. If they ever don't get a signal, they're supposed to immediately contact us to get the battery changed. So it needs a sanity check. Where, you know, how are all this done? So that was the concerns with it. Is what's the perfect solution? I don't know. I think in time, they will find ways of putting a better GPS in. You talked with the AirTags, for instance, and that's a good method. But an AirTag is only useful if it's within so many feet of an iPhone.
Yeah, and see, I've never used an AirTag. I know so little about them. Anybody that knows me will realize I don't own any Apple products. Not that I have anything specifically against them. I just never did, never went that way. So you know what I mean? Why would I start trying to convert at this point? Oh, I can see myself in doubly cameras now. Because Ben has left the meeting. All right, so Ben oops-a-daisied himself there. He'll come back in, and you know what? Just while we wait for Ben to come back in here, we talked about this in previous episodes, that GPS trackers are getting smaller. I mean, when I was first starting into the woods, I couldn't even imagine a GPS tracker that was the size of a watch. Most GPSs were pretty big, you know, the old Garmin handhelds. I still have a Garmin handheld that I use and still like. Oh, you're back.
Just had to jump out for a second.
Fair enough.
No, I moved my mouse and it must have shut the window down.
That's all good. We carried on. All I was saying was that GPS trackers are getting smaller. You had said, you know, the technology to keep it running and stuff like that. But you're right. The technology is becoming more readily available for smaller trackers that last longer. And what I was saying was, when I first started going into the woods and GPSs became individually available, you didn't have to be a company. I don't know if you remember the old Trimble GPSs. You know, they were like this big. They were yellow. Good thing is they were basically indestructible. I went to one of the outdoors expos, and to prove the point, Buddy was throwing this thing like as hard as he could into the air and letting it hit the ground. And it was, you know, perfectly fine. But the reality was it was like carrying around half a cinder block. It was massive. You know what I mean? And then came the first private ones that were kind of like the Garmin handhelds and things like that. They were still fairly big and bulky. Battery life wasn't fabulous. If you left that on all day, I know I still have my handheld. It runs on 2 AA batteries. If I leave it on nonstop, I might get like 2-3 days out of it. And that's if it's not constantly trying to compute stuff in the background. So if it's like tracking my routes and things like that. Nomadic Hacker, all the technical difficulties today. No, man, you're just joining us for one of our live shows as in the last couple of them. Pretty standard for us. We are not high-tech people. We fumble through this at the best of her ability, and that's pretty much it. You would think after 4 years of doing this, we would have all this figured out. Now we're no closer today than we were basically on our 10th or 11th episode. But, yeah, anyway, long story short, technology's getting smaller, so I don't see it being very far off in the future, maybe 10, 15 years, that maybe we'll have a great solution for this, because the outdoors community, bushcrafters, hikers a lot, specific, like adventure seekers. And I do attribute some of this to YouTube and video sharing services such like that. And, you know, I'm plugging YouTube because here we are putting our videos up on YouTube. But, I mean, it's causing a lot more people to go out and be live the adventure lifestyle than ever have. And they're looking for ways to track themselves because, you know, I was just watching some YouTube videos last week where it's just a fella in his dirt bike and he just finds old trails and bombs down them. You know what I mean? And a couple of times he's been like, oh yeah, I had no idea where I was by the end of it. I just pull out my GPS and go, okay, how do I get back? So more and more people are looking for this technology and it's getting smaller and smaller. And we talked about the Garmin watches. You can get a fully functioning GPS basically on your wrist. I mean, our smartwatch is not quite as good. This is, you know, mine has Google Maps on it. I can get Google Maps providing I have cell phone coverage. But I mean, you can get a full
Google Maps are downloadable.
Yeah, good point.
So there is this. I want to send you something.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. This has been around for a while, and it might be out of your price range. Like, it's mildly expensive. But it is a watch, like wristwatch, that has a built-in ELT in.
Okay.
And if you hit the button, just like if a plane crashes or certain boats would have a similar type thing, it's an emergency locator beacon, and it transmits on a frequency that's, I think, receivable by both satellite as well as most other.
If anybody that wants to join in that's watching the live video, specifically thinking of you there, Mr. Hacker, because you were so kind to join us, here's what we're looking at here. Oh, nope, not that. Try this.
It's the Breitling.
Watch that comes with a rescue team. So yeah, and it looks like so frequency comes to the rescue. If it's where you turn the antenna, I guess. That's what it says on the button there. Turn antenna, must engage the antenna.
Yeah, I think you turn the antenna, comes out. Like a wire.
I mean, it's kind of a neat little solution. And that's basically like a personal man down button, is what I'm getting out of this.
Yeah. They're not cheap. I'm trying to see if I can find a cost here for you. Yeah, $15,725.
Jeez. Yeah, that's pretty bad. I do see a link there that says, are you looking to finance your Breitling watches?
You can buy this or a Rolex. Like, really, it's down to that. But one of them can call, you know, help from around the world, and the other one can tell the time. So
this one can tell the time too, though, just saying.
One's a mechanical and one's electronic, but I mean, it's kind of good for like a one-shot deal. I got the feeling you can't, like, once you hit that button, the battery's not going to last a long time, so you better be ready. But yeah, it is one of those things that it probably transmits for an hour or so, and they'll home in on it pretty quickly. as technology advances, it's going to get better and better. And I mean, I think we all believe that at some point they're going to, you know, offer a chip that you can install into your body that will keep you attached to the network permanently.
Mel's kind of laughing over there. I think she may stick her head in here and say a few words on, you know, coming back to our core story there, the lady with Alzheimer's. She may say a few words on neurodiversity. If anybody's wondering why Mel's going to stick her head in on this one, it's because Mel actually is one of the better people in our area for neurodivergence. She'll tell a little bit about her own story here. Like, don't get me wrong, but this is kind of what she does. And she's dancing in the hallway saying that's exactly what I do. As she's trying to put her hair up into a bun here. Like, you don't have to get that fancy. Anyway, getting back to the core story, I still find it amazing. 5 days in the woods, this lady just went for a walk and functioned perfectly, came out smiling. So to Ben's point, you don't really have to have all the latest and greatest of equipment and stuff there. I mean, granted, they did say the weather was very on her side. You know, she had a lot of lucky things happen to her. As Ben said, we're not telling anybody to ditch all their gear and wander into the woods. But it is very doable. And it does kind of make you think about what are the requirements you need of your own versus the wants of what you need. If an elderly 69-year-old lady can do it with nothing but a cup and a stick, you know what I mean? That kind of almost makes me feel bad going in there with my deluxe tent and air mattress and sleeping bag.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You coming there, Melly B?
So I'm disappointed, my friend.
What are you disappointed in, Ben?
I ordered a air mattress from Amazon, a climate insulated hammock V, and they did not send me a hammock V.
Uh-oh. What'd you get?
But the bag says it's a hammock V. It's just a V.
It's just a V. Is it a repackaging error or potentially an advertising error?
No, I think it's a repackaging error, so I have to reach out to them now.
That's too bad. You had said you had recently gone camping. So while we wait for Mel to come in here, I think you're the first one of us to get to the woods on any real good adventure. Why don't you give us a quick recap on that?
I don't know. This involves other people. I didn't ask permission.
Just tell us about what you did. They can remain anonymous for this point.
So, yeah, no, I decided to go motorcycle camping. So we decided to go behind Harrison Lake camping. There's some forest fires in the area. I'm going to let a few things slip because it makes sense. In prepping, there was a tire that needed to be repaired. The tube had a leak. We had some trouble getting that. If anyone needs some advice on how to replace a tire or tube in a motorcycle tire, when you get your spoons, never go past 90 degrees.
No.
Right?
Yeah, I know where this is going.
Because you will pinch the tube if you go past 90 degrees. We tried partly inflating. We tried everything. It does seem to be that if you go much past 90 degrees, you're definitely going to cut it. So we had a lot of trouble. But other than that, we got it a little bit later than we expected, drove in along some pretty cool dirt roads, ended up in a popular recreational campground area, and we actually passed through some forest fires. We could see smoke up in the mountains. You could see like a spot here and a spot there and a spot there. And at one point, I was within a couple of feet of a smoking patch of burning forest fire. We made it to the lake, spent the night. The reason I have this lovely, useless mattress is that I did find I was getting a bit cold, and we did need to replace a mattress within the household. So I said, if I'm going to replace it, I'd like to replace one that's meant for hammocks. So I ordered this one, and it's not the right one. But yeah, I also learned some more about my limits of what I can drive and what I can't. And me and you can chat about that later. But yeah, steep, rough terrain with very loose gravel is still a challenge for me. And I think it would be for a lot of people. And I know one of the solutions is to just hit it with a little bit more speed. You'll keep a bit more stable and you go up the hill. But when one side of you is a really steep cliff down and the other side is basically a mountain straight up, that was unnerving to say the least. And argumentatively, maybe I shouldn't have been driving there.
I mean, what's the old saying? If you don't live on the edge, you're taking up too much space.
True story.
When the bike went sideways, I was on both edges. Fortunately for me, somebody who very much reminded me of you for physical prowess, it came up with a side-by-side almost immediately and jumped off. And he's like, you need help picking it up? And I'm like, sure. Like, at this point, I wasn't confident that I was picking up a 600-pound bike with gear. Yeah, he helped me pick it up, and he held it. And we got her straightened out, and I managed to get moving, and we went further. The road didn't really get a lot better. We made a call to head back. And still, we were out all day having a great time, visiting sites, some beautiful spots back there, some beautiful lakes, some great scenery.
Sounds like you had quite the adventure. Maybe with some permissions and stuff later on, we can talk more about it.
Yes.
I know there's other people involved there, and I don't want to, you know, throw them into a mix they're not willing to be a part of at this point, because, you know, people don't want to associate with us, except for me. So Mel is coming in on this.
Give me half face. Somebody who only has half a face.
Oh, do I only have half a face? Probably only have half a face for Ben.
Oh, okay.
She's fully on, because what Ben sees over there. Different cameras.
Okay.
For our listening viewers out there, this is my wife, Melissa. She was talking, before the episode, I was talking to her a little bit about this story. So Mel, just to bring you up to speed, we talked about the 60-year-old lady there that went missing for 5 days. She was found completely unharmed. Alzheimer's, one of the big things was they wish they had more tracking options. We did talk about the one from Ground Search and Rescue there. Ben was actually trained on it.
Yeah, I thought you might be. Yeah.
We had a good discussion on that. But when it comes to neurodivergence, tell us a little bit about yourself and just your quick blurb on what you wanted to add in here.
Yeah, so super quick, I kind of peeked in when Robert was watching that video, and they were saying how they really wanted additional tracking resources for people with dementia or other neurodiversity. And I immediately was like, oh, I do this literally every day. Not with the elderly, but more for children who have an elopement risk, so flight risk. The people who, instead of fight or flight or freeze or fawn, they flee. So I deal with this all the time, fleeing children who have additional support needs. And that's what we recommend. First and foremost is some kind of a tracking device. So like the Project Lifesaver that Ben was trained in for Ground Search and Rescue here in Nova Scotia. There's also, you know, the other readily available options. You probably talked about them with like the AirTags. So all of those things, we always encourage parents of fleeing children to look into, to invest in. And then immediately I followed that up with, but there should also be other supports and accommodations in place. So I understand that they were at that time really concerned about what kinds of options they could have for tracking that individual who kind of wandered off in an altered state of consciousness. But there's also, you know, a certain degree of safeguarding that has to come along with that before that happens, when you know that it's kind of their maybe go-to. if their go-to is to take their nightly walk and wander away, you know, if they get confused and often, you know, kind of find themselves outside and then don't know where they are or really what their initial intention was and kind of build off of that and wander off. It's very similar with the children that I work with and that I train trainers how to deal with. So,
and to Ben's point that we had talked about here was for Project, what's it called?
Project Lifesaver?
Lifesaver. I always want to call it Project Lifeline, but it's Project Lifesaver. One of the requirements Ben had mentioned was they actually have to have a 24-hour observer. correct, right. Ben? Somebody has to be observing this person for 24 hours. They can't be living on their own kind of deal. So at this point, there should have some of these things in place, I would assume.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all I really wanted to pop in for, was just to kind of build off of that story with my kind of background knowledge of dealing with individuals who might have this kind of a challenge that they have to face, or that their family kind of tackles alongside of them. And yeah, that's exactly it, right? Usually there's somebody who's primarily responsible for the individual. And then there's also usually additional supports and accommodations in place. Could be anything from a door alarm. There's lots of on the market options for that. To the, you know, the just really classic life alert bracelets and things. So there's like a lot of options, and there's a lot of additional supports and accommodations that I just want parents and families of neurodivergent individuals to be aware of, that there's an option out there for it. So that's all. That's all I really came in for. It's just, like I said, it's something that I do kind of every day on a different scale, but same kind of thing. So yeah, I thought it was interesting. So I'm glad she's okay. One other thing
to note with Project Lifesaver, something that I don't think a lot of people know, and maybe even Mel, you don't, is that you have to be approved by a local agency to even get on it. And the agency I worked for actually did refuse a couple of people because they didn't feel that it was safe for us to support them in it. So if they're the type of people that maybe have somebody that could be aggressive.
Like aggressive, yeah.
And there was a couple of things, because we have to go in and change the battery. And there was a couple of instances where we had people where we were basically told we might be met with aggression and even. And so when it was sat down and said, we had a lot of trouble getting people to go to the batteries because it's a volunteer service and you have to travel. Stance, for instance, where I was too, had to travel quite a distance. So getting a couple of people to go and do the servicing, if that became more of a hassle, then it would be something we couldn't support. So you have to meet the criteria and you have to be kind of approved by that other service. It is a good service and it does do a lot for a lot of people, but it has its limitations.
Absolutely. It does serve a very kind of unique purpose, like you said. Like it's kind of a certain subset of the individuals who might be able to benefit from it could actually kind of utilize that service. But I mean, anything that's like that, that gives you that ability to kind of keep track of your loved ones that you know might be in a vulnerable position and that might do that kind of fleeing activity. That makes sense, though. I mean, especially for a volunteer service. And yeah.
So, yeah, because Project Lifesaver is not, like, Project Lifesaver itself is a for-profit industry.
Right.
But it uses volunteer organizations to administer.
Love that when that happens.
When you buy batteries and when you're paying for your subscription service, none of that money goes to your local search and rescue or police force. It goes to Project Lifesaver, and right. We do it as a service to you for free. But the money goes to Project Lifesaver, and they make enough money to support, for instance, a race car in NASA, or in NASCAR, right?
Right.
So do understand what you're involved with, but is it a useful service? 100%.
Yeah.
Can it help? Could it save your loved one? 100%. Know what you're getting into.
And like I said, that's what I'm dealing with is, you know, you have a 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old with a diagnosed neurodivergence and, you know, their response is to leave the school and run into the woods and be gone. Then I understand, like, it might not be the most, you know, maybe kosher company that you have operating the service at the high end, but it does provide that service for the families who just need peace of mind. When it happens.
And the thing is, it's basically one of the better, more capable services. I know that we, as the organization I was with, we had often had conversations of whether we could truly meet the 30-minute turnaround time. As volunteers, most of us would have had to go to our base, which was in the middle of East Hants. It was at least a 15-minute to 20-minute drive if you were in the county and not at the base, which most people weren't.
Yeah, well, rural fire service over here, we understand that.
We're 20 minutes depending to get that to the hall where the sometimes. Person
goes missing to.
Yeah.
You know, we search and rescue, one of their biggest issues is a longer turnaround time. And one of the reasons the fire department oftentimes ended up doing searches, or at least starting them,
yep.
was because they have a quicker turnaround time. Search and rescue groups tend to be based for a large area and one off service, where most communities have at least a volunteer fire department, so we can get a start on it. But in other areas like Ontario, it's done by the police service. I think it's a much better system because I am told that most of the police cars have a tracker in there. So they get the call and they're told the number of the tracking device and they can start searching right away. Every car can activate their thing and locate that person really quickly.
Cool. That's good to know, especially that the service is kind of offered by different organizations in different provinces.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Cool.
It's definitely worth contacting, and if you contact them, they will set you up with your local provider,
right.
and you should be able to get a meeting, and
Cool.
But you mentioned some really good things, like door alarms to let you know if they're coming or going, and we mentioned even like cell phones. Most people are so addicted to them, they don't think about it. That will track you as long as you have cell phone service. But some of the other devices, like if you wanted to use, say, the InReach device, it's a little bulky, and by a little, I mean not very much, but still compared to something that goes on your wrist. I think I have one here. Yeah. I mean, that's the device there. It looks like a tiny walkie-talkie.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But you need, if you want unlimited tracking for every 10 minutes, you're looking at $30-$40 a month. And honestly, you'd have to be charging it every couple of nights. If you're using it at its fullest ability, and they have it in town, how are you gonna? It's not bad, but on a 11-year-old child.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't play games or anything, so it's kind of, you know, and it has buttons they can turn it on and off.
Yeah.
That's the other problem. You would need something.
Oh yeah, that for sure wouldn't facilitate any of the children that I work with. Absolutely, no.
110% of the time, they're going to turn it off when you need it most.
Absolutely. And that's why we pushed the Project Lifesaver bracelet so much with, like, especially our autistic, like, under preteen age, because they don't have cell phones yet, necessarily. They're not carrying them with them. Like, that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 to kind of, you know, 10 to 12 age, they don't have their phone with them. They don't have a phone. If you give them like the air tags, they can just unclip them. You know, if you give them even one of those little GPS tracking watches that have the games on them, we looked at them even for our daughter, and you know, you can just not wear it or you can turn it off. And I mean, what good is that going to be if your child elopes and then you're trying to find them in the woods at 11 o'clock at night and they didn't even put their watch on that morning? It's not going to help. The only thing with the Lifesaver bracelet was that, you know, once it's on, and there's no kind of option or buttons or anything that the children can mess around with, and it's waterproof and it, you know, stays with the child no matter what. So,
well, Ben said that, but the ultimate goal was to try and make it seem like, you know, basically a piece of jewelry. You just put it on, forget about it.
We've had some success with putting like air tags on shoelaces instead of a bracelet or that kind of thing. You know, that is a little bit more consistent. They, you know, they're gonna put their shoes on. If it's their school shoes, whatever, you make sure that that's where it goes. And it just never comes off, and that kind of works. There's been some good results with that, but putting it on like the bracelets, there's just no option that doesn't allow you to just take it off and leave it off. So, and then, I mean, once they hit that teenage, it gets a lot easier because they're bigger and they have their cell phones with them. So all of those other tracking things, the apps and all of that stuff, helps a lot at that point. But yeah, those little kids are hard to keep safe when they decide they want to bolt.
And this becomes the same problem as, I imagine, back to our story, is the lady with Alzheimer's. It's almost like a full circle.
It is. It's so funny.
You start off And you develop your brain, and then unfortunately something like Alzheimer's and dementia is going to come in and kind of tears your brain down, and it slowly starts reverting you back.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same kind of characteristics and traits, and that's why I got so passionate when I saw the video recap. I was like, that's exactly what I deal with. It's just with kids instead of adults, but it's so similar. So similar.
Yeah. So it's good that things are out there, and like you said, it is one of the better solutions that we could find. We looked when we were looking to see if there was alternatives. I asked about, like, is there a GPS unit? And yeah, it takes a bigger battery, more power. Where this thing is a low level power, just constantly chirps. And, I mean, inaudibly, it's electronic and it's unique. It's a unique identifier. So we can have 12 people in the same school with one, and we can tune into one person.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know that. That's kind of cool. Sorry.
Yeah, there's. I think the codes are all like. There's three main frequencies, and you can do 999 within each one. There's a lot. The likelihood of two people in the same area with the same signal is pretty slim.
Very slim.
That's so interesting. Cool.
Alright.
Yeah,
cool.
That's all. Anyways, just thought maybe some of the solutions that we use for our kiddos might help the elderly as well. Like you said, that full circle. You know, you might only need it for 10 years when the child is little, and you might only need it for 10 years kind of as your elderly loved one kind of hits that timeline in their life where they can't always be, you know,
so,
responsible for where they're at.
When's Robert getting his?
He has one.
I'm pretty
already.
Sure I'm already tracked.
No. not any that he knows about.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure I'm already tracked, Ben.
When do the transdermal trackers come into play? I don't know.
You mean,
we'll see.
I'm pretty sure I'm probably the test guinea pig.
I joked about that, or not joked. I said that earlier. I think that's something that is going to come through, though, transdermal. Yeah. And it's going to keep us, you know, it's going to let them know what our heart rate is. And,
yeah. We'll be able to pay things by blinking at the debit machine. Yeah, it's fine. It's all fine.
And the thing we said earlier, but like the air tags, they work, but they're only good if they're within so many feet of an iPhone.
Yeah.
So, you know, if everyone's smart in the area and they have Androids, then it doesn't work at all.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, even the GPS, like, they're so bulky. We looked at these, like I said, quickly, the GPS tracking watches, like, specifically marketed for kids and for, you know, special needs, if you want to call it that. But they're so bulky. Mm. They're so bulky just to be able to function. And then again, it's so dependent on whether they're charged, whether they have a fresh battery, whether the child wears it, whether they turn it off, whether they take it with them. Like, it's so, like, yeah, it could
work.
It's going to
be all the same problems that a lot of people with Alzheimer's and stuff will
get. Well, exactly. They're going to do the exact same thing. They're going to take it off. It's going to get itchy. They're going to put it down on a log and keep walking in the woods. Like, it's not, you know, it's not going to be a guarantee.
Well, we had a client that was known for taking the device off. Mm-hmm. And so they had to try different collars, and they found that what they found was it was agitating his skin. He would get annoyed with it and scratch it. And next thing you know, he had it ripped off. And I don't blame the guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're not comfortable wearing it, you're not going to. So, and that's with a very small, lightweight device that's designed to not agitate the skin and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who can't wear watches to begin with. So no.
There's definitely a market out there. If somebody figures out how to make it smaller and put it in a device that can't come off or turn off, we're down. I'll recommend you to everybody.
So just a couple comments from the, or sorry, just a couple things from the comments over here. Nomadic Hacker, we often think of survival as fun or a game, but stories like this brings it back to reality. And that is kind of a thing. Like, survival does happen for people out there. You know what I mean? It's not just all fun and games all the time. Sometimes people are out there. And in this instance, she may not have realized the situation she was in.
Yeah.
But she was out there surviving. And of course, the other one we have here is we have Jeremy join us, LoneWolf902. He came in and said his hello there. So by all means, say hi back to him there, Ben. And we have Danny from Red Sand Adventures joining us. He just got back from a camping trip himself. And planning for survival isn't just for you, but it's for your family too. And that's the thing. You do want your family members to be safe. You do want them to come home safe every night, even if they tend to wander a little bit. Well, you don't want that to be the last thing.
It's
you know
no secret that Robert and I's daughter has disabilities and has neurodiversities. And you know what? This is taking her camping is not only like a complete exercise in being prepared, but like there's so many extra things that you have to think about, and eloping is one of them. It's one thing to, you know, take off from school or take off in a, you know, a residential area or take off from your home, places she's familiar with, that kind of thing. But if your child takes off when you're camping, when you're out doing things in an unfamiliar area, in, you know, maybe deep woods or you know, dangerous areas with cliff faces and waterfalls and running water, it can get really scary really fast. Really fast.
And I guess that would almost bring some of the limitations back from that project, is because that 30-minute response time. Now, even if you were in your camping base, that's you're not going to get to where we're at in 30
where
minutes.
Where we're at.
Well, that's the thing, right? They would and they may not contact your normal, by the time you manage to call. So if you're in camp and you may not have cell phone service, so you may have to drive 15, 20 minutes to get to the nearest cell phone service, make the call. Then they have to organize and get to you. They may have to locate the nearest group, give them the information. Hopefully, you know your code.
Yeah.
If you don't know the frequency of your particular tracker, they're going to have to contact Project Lifesaver. It's going to take a little bit longer. They're going to show up, and we can't do a search by ourselves. So we have to have at least two members show up, you know, to do that. So those things can cause delays. And autistic children in particular tend to head towards water and bright lights.
Mm-hmm. Can confirm,
yes. So ones that have been searched for, I wasn't part of the search, but I heard the story enough times. That's exactly where they actually found them, like really in a building close to water. And there was one incident in Nova Scotia where the young fella, I think they found him, but he was in bad shape, and I don't think he survived. Like, that was before Project Lifesaver. I think it was one of the big reasons they brought it in. And I talked to the guys that were part of that search, and they, you know, a lot of them struggled with that for years, because it is a young kid. Even when it's not, it's still a big deal. But when it's a young kid, it really tends to hit people hard.
And that's the other thing with these situations. Normal, quote unquote, situations would be the person would be somewhat cognitive aware to try and self-preserve themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
In these instances here, Alzheimer's, dementia, autism, other spectrum disorders there, or neurodivergencies, they may not have the know-how or the capability of trying to self-preserve themselves. They are not going to seek shelter. They are not going to realize they need to drink water. They are not going to realize that they need to find food. Not everything is food. There is a lot of other things that can go into this that can make so things very bad very quickly.
Introceptive. And all of it.
Almost all little kids may not go to someone calling their name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, autism is another layer on top of that. But even
they're
even
kids first, and kids are terrified of everything.
Right? Yeah. That's it. Like, if one of my kids who aren't, you know, diagnosed as part of the spectrum or whatever, but they're still, you know, kids.
Yep.
It's not it would not be unheard of for one of them to, you know, if they got lost, think, oh, am I in trouble? I don't know who this person is. This is a scary person. They hide. They'll sometimes run. One of the things I think they found was they're more likely to go to women than men, right? In general,
because
like kids.
Most of the care providers are women, even though we want more men in the education field. That's my plug. But anyways,
No, it's all very true. We're past our hour, Ben, for what was supposed to be, you know, literally a fairly quick episode. But I guess let's wrap this up, I guess. I'm trying to think of a good segue into that, but there is no other segue into this other than let's try and wrap it up.
You need to get some of those good cuts, like the dudes.
Yeah.
on the internet have.
Well, I
okay, I love you, bye.
Is we still want to say, you know, get out there, have fun, make sure you take care of yourself, and, you know, think about the things that affect other people and how you can, you know, how you can help each other. But I mean, the reality is, with a good attitude, what we said, and some minor equipment, you can actually last a lot longer than you probably expect.
And that was my big takeaway from this, was the positive attitude, because the lady in the story was just that. She was very positive. She had a good time.
So, it's great. Nobody was watching her. She got to do what she wanted.
But all right, folks, all of this was food for thought here tonight. We did cover a lot of topics. Hopefully there was something in there for everybody. As always, get out there, play safe, have fun, let us know about it.
Yeah.
Night, everybody. See y'all.